Mr. Chair, we are not yet at quorum, so we're going to wait a few minutes, and in the meantime, hopefully we'll have enough members to join so that we'll have quorum quickly. But we'll monitor it, and we'll be in touch as soon as we're close to quorum to let you know.
Thank you, Chair.
Hi, can you hear me? Okay, good. Okay, perfect. Now I'm gonna ask. Can you hear me?
Mr. Chair, it appears we have quorum, so if you'd like, we can go ahead and begin the meeting. Mr. Chair? Yeah, okay, all right, thank you, sir. All right, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the December 3rd, 2021 Juvenile Justice Coordinating Council meeting. We thank you for joining us today. Before the roll call, I want to draw your attention to page one of the agenda that includes information on how to submit your information to make a public comment. As indicated on the agenda, please send an email to the JJCC email address to submit your request to make a live or written public comment. Please be sure to include all the information requested. If we have any questions, we will send a follow-up email requesting missing information that is needed. If you have questions or are experiencing connectivity issues, please send an email to the JJCC email address. We have a reoccurring issue of receiving requests for public comments without the agenda item you wish to address or a telephone number to contact you to have you make your live public comment. When either or both items are missing, we will send a follow-up email to request the missing information that is needed to assist you in making the comments. Therefore, please stay available and watch your device for a follow-up email from us. Additionally, if you submit a request to speak on more than one agenda item, we will contact you for the second item. Please stay near your device for the second item you have requested. Please be sure to answer the phone when we call you. There are times we experience a high volume of emails and our team will respond as soon as possible. These steps and information will assist you in being able to make your comments. It is our goal to assist you in each of your requests to speak. With that, Mr. Chair, we'll begin the roll call. Chief Pitino for probation?
Present. Thank you, Sharon.
Thanks. Our Board of Supervisors or their alternate? I do not see them here. Alternate Public Defender's Office? Thank you. Department of Children and Family Services? You don't see her yet. From Mental Health?
And I'm present.
Good afternoon. Department of Public Health? You don't see her yet. Department of Public Social Services? Yvonne Smith. I don't see her yet. District Attorney's Office? Right. Juvenile Court?
Bishop Penrose, I'm present.
Okay. Alaco Parks and Recreation?
I'm present.
Thank you. Los Angeles County Office of Education?
Good afternoon, everyone.
Okay, thank you. Los Angeles Unified School District?
Fran is present.
Okay, thank you. Los Angeles Police Department? Lieutenant Smith. I don't see her. Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department? Lieutenant Medrano. I don't see him. Office of Division of Reentry, Division of Youth Diversion Development?
Present.
Right, Public Defender's Office?
Virginia,
present. City of Los Angeles Mayor's Office? Don't see him yet, Mr. Zachary. Nonprofit community-based drug and alcohol provider? Juan Navarro. I don't see him yet. Nonprofit CBO representative supervisorial district 1, Bikila Ochoa?
I'm here, thank you.
Thanks. Nonprofit CBO representative supervisorial district 2, Patricia Song? Right, good afternoon. Nonprofit CBO representative supervisorial district 3, Josh Reed?
Here.
Hi, thank you. Nonprofit CBO representative supervisorial district 4, Johnny Dron? What is his name? Johnny?
Here. Can you hear me?
Yes, now I can. Thank you. Nonprofit CBO representative supervisorial district 5, Mr. Dutton?
I'm here.
Thank you. At-large community representative Dr. Denise Price? Yes, we can. Thank you, Dr. Price. At-large community representative Diego Rodriguez?
Here.
Hi, I see you. At-large community representative Gloria Jana Gonzalez? See you on there. Hi, thank you. At-large community representative Kent Mendoza?
Here.
Thank you. At-large community representative Jeanette Lomelli? Don't see her yet. Now let me go back for the people that were not in the meeting. I see a couple have added. Board of Supervisors, I still don't see them. Department of Children and Family Services, I thought I saw Regina.
Is it just me, or did Sharon disappear?
I have the same thing, Josh. I think we lost Sharon. Sharon, I think there may be an issue with your connection there.
Can you hear us from this computer? We're having trouble in the center.
We can hear you faintly now. I think it's late Friday and your computer wants to go home too.
All right, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, you have 19 present. You have a quorum. If you can hear me.
Thank you, Sharon. It is faint, but thank you for that. So welcome, everybody. I want to get right to it.
Chair, we don't have sound on this end, so we'll try to work on our end to try to get some sound.
Okay. Can you all hear me? Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thanks, everybody. So why don't we move? We're through item number two. Can we move to item number three, approval of the minutes for last JJCC meeting? If there are no questions, I guess we need a motion to approve the minutes.
Motion.
Thanks, Mr. Dutton. Can I get a second?
Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Miranda. Appreciate it. I don't know, admin team, if there's any public comment on item number three.
No, sir, there's not.
Great, thank you. So I'll move us to old business.
Yes,
I don't know if there's any old business that needs to be covered either.
But we didn't vote on it in the minutes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hang with us, folks. It looks like we lost Ms. Hawkins altogether. So just give us a couple minutes. Thanks for your patience, everybody. Well, hang on. You're muted.
All right, sorry. So we're ready to take the vote. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. Board of Supervisors, not here. Alternate Public Defender's Office?
We'll be abstaining from this vote. Thank you.
Right, thank you. Department of Children's Services, in case they joined us? Department of Mental Health?
Approve.
Thank you. Department of Public Health, Yanira Lima? Department of Public Social Services, in case Siobhan has joined us? District Attorney's Office?
Approve.
Juvenile Court? Lake Parks and Recreation?
Approve.
Mercy?
Approved.
Thank you. Los Angeles County Office of Education, in case they joined us? Los Angeles Unified School District?
Approve.
Tapal, was that you? Tapal Osborne?
Yes.
Saying approved? All right, thank you. Los Angeles Police Department, in case they joined us. Los Angeles Sheriff's Department, in case they joined us. Office of Diversion and Reentry, Division of Youth Diversion and Development.
Approve.
Public Defender's Office. City of Los Angeles Mayor's Office. How about this? Nonprofit community-based drug and alcohol provider Juan Navarro has joined us. Nonprofit CBO Supervisorial District Juan Miquel Ochoa. Nonprofit CBO Supervisorial District 2, Patricia Song.
Approved.
Nonprofit CBO Supervisorial District 3, Josh Green. Nonprofit CBO Supervisorial District 4, Johnny Gron. Johnny, we see you lit. What's your vote?
Yes.
Thank you. Nonprofit CBO Districts 5, Mr. Dutton.
Aye.
At-large committee representative, Dr. Price. At-large committee representative, Diego Rodriguez.
Approved.
At-large committee representative, Gloria Jana Gonzalez. At-large committee representative, Kent Mendoza.
Yes.
At-large committee representative, Jeanette Lomelli. She's joined us. All right, please come on, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, we have 18 yeses, no noes, 3 abstentions, motion passes.
Okay.
Might be done.
Thank you, Sharon. So she's going to run off and try to see if she can get connected in the next couple of minutes. So just give us one moment, and then we'll move on to old business. I apologize.
Mr. Chair, we're having problems with audio. We actually lost connection here.
Okay.
So, I think they fixed it.
We can hear you now. Can we guide us through on that device?
Yes, we're good. All right. All right, so our next agenda item is the JJCC evaluation, which is under 5A.
Great. So no public comment on old business or anything like that?
So it's just after Stephanie Holliday.
I don't know if it's just me or, but I could barely hear you, Sharon.
Yeah, we're having a hard time hearing you still, Sharon. But I think we're going to move on to Ms. Holliday from RAND Corporation. She'll move us through her presentation at this time.
Yes, you all can hear me okay? Great, perfect. Thank you so much for having me back again to present to you all today. I wanted to focus on two things with my presentation. So first, I just want to give you a little bit of an update in terms of where we are with the evaluation compared to when I spoke with you a couple of months ago. And then I also want to present the findings from our gap analysis, which I referenced last presentation and for which the publication should be released in the next couple of weeks. So I wanted to share the findings with all of you. Next slide, please. All right, so we'll begin with the evaluation progress update. I first wanted to just take a moment to let you know where we're at in terms of the programs that we're focusing on currently and where we're headed into the future. We've gotten input from various stakeholders in terms of putting together this kind of next agenda for where we'll be heading with the evaluation, and we thought it would be helpful to communicate with folks just so that you have an idea of where we are and where we think we're going to head. So you all know that in 2021, we've been focused on mental health screening, assessment and treatment, multisystemic therapy, the CARE program, and the juvenile mental health court. As a reminder, we are contracted to do basically an in-depth evaluation of 4 to 6 programs a year. We're still wrapping up data collection given some of the delays in coming to us for these 2021 programs. But in the meantime, we've already started reaching out to some of the programs that we're planning to focus on in 2022. If you see your program's name on the 2022 list and you haven't heard from us, you will be hearing from us in the coming weeks. Next slide, please. So because we're starting this outreach and people might be starting to talk about who's next on this evaluation slate, I thought that it might be helpful just to give an idea of how we've gone about picking the interviews of focus or the programs of focus. So there are a few different things that we've used to shape this decision making. As I said, we've gotten input from various stakeholders. We've also been thinking about the recency of prior evaluation efforts. We know some of the programs have participated in more recent evaluations. When that is the case, we've reviewed those methods and they generally seem rigorous and very similar to the type of evaluation that we would do. And so for those programs, rather than do another evaluation in quick succession, we think it's a better use of the funds to focus on programs that haven't been evaluated quite so recently. As you may have noticed, we're also trying to group programs that have a similar focus, either in terms of the types of services that get provided or the population of interest. What this allows us to do is not just look at some of the lessons learned from an individual program, but also to allow some cross-program learnings. So for example, in 2021, with our focus on programs that serve youth that have clinical mental health needs, we can look at each individual program, but also see, are there things that we can glean from these programs in terms of serving this type of youth population? And that's guided some of our thinking for the next couple of years as well. And then finally, we're also thinking about the availability of data, both in terms of which programs already have more of an established infrastructure for collecting program-specific data, but also when programs got up and running, how long they've been in operation, how long they've had to serve youth and therefore have data available. We've also been thinking about the programs that may have been more affected by COVID and which might need a little bit more time to get back up and running and again have more participants and have more data available. So that's what's guided kind of our initial focus in terms of these programs. If you can move to the next slide, I also wanted to give just an update on where we are in terms of collecting data for these. So we're about to get started with our youth and family engagement. I mentioned last presentation that we will be doing interviews and potentially at some point in the future, COVID permitting, focus groups with youth who are served by these programs as well as their parents or caregivers. That piece got started later because it required an additional approved petition from the courts. But our big push has been to do interviews with staff of these various programs. So I just wanted to let you know that we have been busy, even quite busy in the time since I last presented. To date, we've gotten 54 names across the first 4 programs we're focusing on. We've done 22 interviews with 31 staff members. Sometimes the interviews will have a couple of staff members on at one time. We got an additional 27 names just in the month of November alone, which has kept our team very busy. Of those, we've already been able to complete a handful, and we have 11 scheduled in the next 2 weeks, I believe, and we're in the process of scheduling 12 more. On the next slide, as I mentioned, we also did start outreach to 3 of those additional programs that will be our focus in 2022. We've done 1 initial interview with 3 staff members. We are scheduled to do interviews with the 2 other programs And we plan to begin outreach to the remaining three programs for 2022 before the end of the calendar year. So as I said, if you haven't heard from us already, you will be hearing from us. Next slide. I also wanted to give a sense of where we're thinking our focus may be in the upcoming years should our contract continue into 2023 and 2024. So on this slide, you see kind of the list of possible options that we've started to think about. Again, we've slated these in based on those factors that I named before in terms of availability of data and things like that. So this is what we're thinking for the time being. You know, we have time before 2023 and 2024. So this does have the potential to change if there are new priorities that emerge, or if there are other considerations that might cause us to shift some of these around. We have a lot of programs listed under each of these years. So if you don't mind clicking to the next slide, I did want to just remind that our statement of work does include a focus on about 4 to 6 programs a year, just due to the depth of the intended evaluation. So in 2022, it will be our first chance to test out what it's like to do more than 4 programs. We felt like 4 was manageable. We could probably have the capacity to do more than that. We'll be testing out 6 in 2022. And so we'll see how things go and what our capacity might look like for 2023 and 2024. So that is my update in terms of evaluation progress. With that, I thought we could shift to what I hope is interesting to folks, which are the results of the gap analysis that we have conducted over the past several months. So to refresh everyone on what exactly we're doing with this gap analysis, you may remember that in 2018, RDA conducted a gap analysis of the JJCPA portfolio. What they did was identify 7 best practices for juvenile justice systems, which was based on a review of the literature. And then within their report, they did kind of a crosswalk between those best practices and the existing portfolio of services. And they made a bunch of recommendations, really actionable recommendations, related to the types of service approaches, the service types that are offered, as well as things related to system capacity and administration. So this year, RAND undertook our gap analysis effort, and we really initially conceptualized this as an opportunity to update and expand on this prior report. Next slide. So one of the things that we wanted to do with our gap analysis was first to determine whether those best practices identified by RDA were still supported by the research evidence, and whether there were any new best practices that had emerged in the past 3 years. We also wanted to set out to understand the extent to which those best practices were reflected in the portfolio of services. But rather than taking the lens of looking at the specific programs, which had been done fairly recently, we took a little bit of a different approach, which was to think about the process by which JJCPA portfolio of services are planned and how those funding allocations are made. Next slide. And so in doing this, we thought about we kind of broke it into the 3 stages that you see on the slide here, how the JJCPA portfolio is set into place in any given year. So starting with the information gathering stage, this is when the annual survey by the JJCC CAC goes out, when the request for community feedback goes out. It's when the request for applications to solicit funding for programs goes out. And it's also when members of the JJCC and the CMJJP ad hoc subcommittee are reviewing evaluation data when it's available. The next phase is about the planning and allocations. So this is when the prior year's CMJJP is undergoing a period of revision and updating. This is also when the CMJJP ad hoc subcommittee is making their initial funding allocation recommendations, which does include input from the JJCC CAC and from the full JJCC. And then with the final stage being adoption, where the JJCC votes on those allocation recommendations, the request to apply for the funds is submitted to the County Board of Supervisors, and then once approved, that application gets submitted to the state. So I have it laid out in a linear way, but we know this is a cycle that then repeats year upon year. Next slide. So it was kind of with that lens, the lens of the best practices and the lens of that process that we set out to do this gap analysis. And we used four different data sources for the analysis. First, we did a review of the academic and gray literature. The purpose of that was really to determine if those best practices were still evidence supported and to see if there were any additional best practices that we wanted to include. Next, we did a document review. So we got our hands on all sorts of documents, CMJJPs, Youth Service Needs Assessment. We took a look at agendas and minutes from meetings and subcommittee meetings. We looked at the funding request, the request for community feedback. Some of these we used in a more descriptive way, just to make sure that we were understanding the ins and outs and the workings of this process. But then we also did a more formal analysis of four of these documents to get a better sense of the extent to which those best practices appear within those documents. We also, as I alluded to the last time I presented, conducted a survey that was fielded to all JJCC members. We ended up having 16 of the members respond. And we conducted interviews with a sample of JJCC members and with a handful of probation staff. For the JJCC member interviews, we wanted to interview about a third of the members with these more in-depth qualitative interviews. We randomly selected those folks in two rounds, and in total, we had 10 people participate in interviews. Next slide. Okay, so to dive into some of what we found. So first, with regards to the best practices, we identified 8 best practices for juvenile justice systems, which you'll see on this slide. Now, 7 of the 8 of these were identified by RDA and still have the support of the literature. So there's really only one additional practice that emerged from our review of the literature. It's signified by the asterisk. It's the purpley box in the lower right corner, which is about attending to program implementation and fidelity. So I won't spend a lot of time talking about what each of these is in the full report. We'll have a little literature blurb that goes along with each of those that provides some of the background for each of these things. But you know, for now, we'll focus kind of on these big picture best practices. And as I said, this really formed the lens through which we did the remainder of our analysis. Next slide. Okay, so I'll begin by talking about our document analysis. So the first thing that we did was basically hold each of 4 documents that we reviewed, the CMJJP, the funding request, the results from the most recent JJCC, CAC, Youth Service Needs Assessment, as well as the request for community feedback on programs and practices. We held those 4 documents up against those 8 best practices to see whether and how the best practices were represented in those 4 documents. So what you see on this page is just kind of a high-level summary of what we found. We have the best practices in the first column. We have the documents across the top. And where you see a check mark on this page is an indicator that the best practice was addressed to some extent within the document. So I think kind of one high-level thing that you can see as you look at this is that there are a lot of best practices that are not getting a lot of formal attention in the documents. So trauma-informed care, not really meaningfully represented in any of the 4. Same with program implementation and fidelity. And we've got a smattering of check marks for the others. The continuum of services is the thing that really is most clearly present in each of these. And one thing that I want to say is that even when a best practice was mentioned in the document, it sometimes gets a varied level of real estate within the document, so to speak. For example, let's just focus on the CMJJP at first. So starting with the best practice of providing a continuum of services from prevention to intervention, that's the best practice that's really most well-defined in the CMJJP. There are clear definitions of at-promise youth, youth with initial and early contacts with law enforcement, and youth on probation, and then descriptions of how those different categories of youth map onto the continuum of services from primary prevention to intervention. And then the CMJJP also goes on to specify a funding strategy across the continuum, with allocating about 25% to primary prevention, 35% to focused prevention or early intervention, and then 30% to intervention. So really well-defined, has clear parameters around what that might look like within the portfolio of JJCPA funded services. Then we might take something like applying a racial equity framework. So racial equity is addressed in the CMJJP. There's a statement on racial equity. It includes a statement noting that the CMJJP should embrace a call for anti-racism and is guided by a commitment to an investment in BIPOC and their communities. But what it doesn't have is that explicit guidance about what that might look like in practice. What would that translate to in terms of a funding strategy? And then we have the best practices like trauma-informed care. There is a very brief mention of trauma-informed behavioral health interventions. It appears in a section of the CMJJP that outlines recommended service categories, but it's like one line of a specific recommendation in one like category of services in the section, and it's really just the term of care, so there's not much more beyond that. So what this is suggesting is that if there's a desire to reflect these best practices in programmatic and funding guidance, then there might be a need to improve the alignment between these documents and the best practices so that there's some idea of what the vision is for what these should look like. Next slide. So that leads us to our interviews and our survey with JJCC members, because in part we wanted to ask that question. So we're assuming that perhaps there's a need to reflect the best practices in the CMJJP and these other important documents. But then, I mean, there is the bigger picture question is how much are these best practices seen as important when making funding decisions? Maybe these aren't really the guiding principles, but there's something else. So this is part of what we asked the JJCC through our survey. Among the survey questions, we asked how often JJCC members are considering each of the best practices, as well as a couple other factors, things like the per youth cost of services and the ages of youth served by the program when they make their funding decisions. And so what you see on this graph is the percentage who said that they consider each factor often or always. Notice there's a lot of bars on one page, but I think the big takeaway here is that JJCC members did indicate that they are considering the best practices, which does suggest that they're seen as important by the group. On the next slide, we also asked members to rank the top three factors that they consider when they make their decisions. And so what you see on this slide is the number of people who rated each best practice in first place, which is blue, second place, which is red, or third place, which is green. So what you see is that a youth development framework got the highest number of votes kind of across the first, second, and third place ranks, followed by whether the program served families and providing culturally responsive services. But I mean, really, most of the factors got at least a handful of first place votes, and certainly some second and third place votes, suggesting again that they are important to stakeholders. Next slide. So this is where the interviews really helped us to fill in the gaps, so to speak, about some of the things that might make it difficult for the JJCC to more formally consider the best practices. What we actually set out to do when we were doing the interviews was to learn more about the ways that these best practices are represented within the portfolio. But over and over, what we were hearing is not necessarily examples of the way it's currently reflected, but more about how they really think that these best practices are important, but sometimes struggle to know if the programs applying for funding are targeting these best practices, or maybe feeling like there's not an agreed upon definition or target for what the best practices should look like when represented in the portfolio of services. And so I put some of the kind of illustrative quotes that capture that theme on this page. So when asking, for example, about the importance of family-focused and community-led services, we had one person say, "It's difficult to get the families involved as part of the kind of services that are given, but there can always be a little bit more of an effort on behalf of JJCPA, JJCC to elevate that need a bit more." So really talking about that need to highlight the importance of family-focused services if that's something that is a guiding principle. Or related to a racial equity framework. I think it could be a more intentional part of the conversation. I think we could be more targeted in who our dollars are going to serve if we're approaching it with an equity lens. I think there's attempts to do that, but we could definitely do more. So again, just highlighting the theme that although these things are seen as important, there are some challenges to being able to identify the ways in which the programs that might receive funding reflect these best practices. And if you can move to the next slide, these conversations also highlighted what some of the limitations are to that process I outlined, and where some of the weaknesses are and what might lead to some of those challenges. So you see these are organized by those three stages that I reviewed earlier. So related to information gathering, some of the limitations that we heard of were a lack of evaluation data, making it difficult to know what programs are effective, what may be worth continued funding, a lack of alignment between that funding request and the request for community input and the best practices or even some of the scoring criteria, and also a limited dissemination of funding opportunities. Some folks weren't sure if maybe they continue to get applications from the same players over and over because those are really the ones who are eligible and working in the space, or because maybe they were missing opportunities to disseminate these types of calls more widely. Related to the planning and allocation phase, several interviewees highlighted that there's just such limited time to both revise the CMJJP and make the funding recommendations because it's a time-consuming process. Others highlighted the limited alignment between the scoring rubric and the best practices, and also just the lack of clear definition of what some of these concepts might mean, which would ensure that if two people are rating a program on something like a racial equity framework or a youth development framework, that they were talking about the same thing when making those ratings. And then also some people felt that they just weren't sure how much flexibility there is to change allocations when there are programs that are traditionally receiving funding annually, just not certain what their role was and how much they have that type of influence. Then related to the adoption phase, one thing that was raised is that, you know, the folks who are on the CMJJP ad hoc subcommittee really do the deepest dive into these programs and are making these recommendations. And sometimes those JJCC members who are not on that ad hoc subcommittee felt like they don't have that full set of information and sometimes wish they knew more when they are doing their voting. And then also a couple of people alluded to the somewhat complicated process that can happen when contracting with selected agencies and just wondering about how it works to have kind of the vision reflected in the application for funding then carried through into the statements of work for the programs when they're being contracted. And so based on all of these findings, we came up with a set of recommendations starting on the next slide, which we also organized by each of those three phases. And each of these recommendations was really developed with the goal in mind of improving the alignment of JJCPA-funded programs with the best practices. So the first two recommendations that you see on this slide are about ways that the funding request and the request for community input could be modified to better reflect the best practices. You know, if these best practices are valued and you want to make sure you're getting information from the programs about the best practices, then those requests could be structured in a way that programs and projects have to explicitly demonstrate how their work aligns with each of the best practices, whether they do that in narrative form or are able to provide some data to demonstrate that. The Youth Service Needs Assessment is another place to think about some modifications. You know, that assessment is a really important way for community input to get integrated into the CMJJP and the recommended allocations. But this is another place where input about the best practices could be more explicitly gathered. One of the other things that we noticed from reviewing the findings that were reported in the last CMJJP is that the largest group of respondents on that assessment is service providers, but we think it would be really valuable if there are ways that you could increase input from families and especially from youth to understand what their priorities might be as well. both with respect to the best practices, but also with some of the other really important topics that are already reflected on that survey. The next recommendation is about making sure that JJCC has access to evaluation data related to implementation and outcomes. It's clear that JJCC members are interested in knowing how effective funded programs are. We just heard that over and over again. Obviously, this is something that our evaluation team also has a vested interest in. It's not without its barriers, lack of data, difficulty engaging program staff, but we're working alongside with probation departments to reestablish some of those standards regarding data collection. We are available to provide technical assistance to programs. It will take some time to put the infrastructure in place to have high quality evaluation data on a consistent basis, but we're really trying to play the long game here. And we're thinking about laying the foundation now for better quality data for years to come. And then the last recommendation in this phase is about possibly using JJCC meetings or subcommittee meetings as a forum for things like expert presentations or information sharing about evidence-based practices. We heard from committee members that it can be tough to keep up with the research literature. I mean, this is, people have their own full-time work that they're doing. They're trying to stay on top of these advancements. So there are options for doing that. Our team can be a part of that, conducting evidence scans or literature searches. There is also so much deep expertise in Los Angeles County and other experts out there who could be invited, just to make sure that people feel like they're up to date on what best practice and evidence-based practices look like. Next slide. The next set of recommendations relate to the planning and allocation phase. So as I mentioned, we kept hearing about how difficult it is to update the CMJJP and make those recommendations with such a short timeline. So if there are ways to consider to alleviate the pressure on JJCC members and probation staff that results from that short timeline, we think those are worth considering. And it's difficult to think of what that might be. It's tough to provide dedicated staff. It's tough to provide a different type of timeline, but you know, JJCC members really take this role very seriously. The members of the CMJJP ad hoc committee do this in addition to their day work, and it's just a lot to happen in a short period. Also, this is something I alluded to earlier, which is about providing some clear operational definitions of what the best practices look like. Could be in the CMJJP, it could be provided with measurable targets. I mentioned how the continuum of services provides kind of a nice model. There are some definitions provided about key terms and constructs. There is a notional potential allocation strategy that's suggested based on a review of some of the county data. So those types of kind of specific and measurable recommendations might be helpful, especially in knowing, are we in alignment with what the best practices are? And do we have a shared vision as a county for what those could look like? And next, ensuring that the scoring rubric that's used to assess the programs is also aligned with the best practices and has some clear scoring guidance. So this is just about, you know, making sure, again, that the best practices are elevated in the process, but also about thinking about making sure that there's a good calibration across people who are making ratings. And then finally, I mentioned that some JJCC members said they just don't know how much power they have or how much it's within their scope to be able to change up things like historical allocations or programs that receive funding. And so some better, I think, clarification around roles and scope might be useful. I know there's a new governance ad hoc subcommittee being convened that might help address the issue. And so something to think about. And then finally, on the last slide, in terms of the adoption phase, really our main recommendation here was just about whether there are ways to provide JJCC members who are not on the CMJJP ad hoc subcommittee with more information to guide their voting that could be useful. As I mentioned, they feel like they sometimes have limited information about the selected programs, things like why those specific programs were chosen, why those specific allocations were made. And so if there are ways that more insight can be provided into the decision-making process, it might increase their confidence in voting to confirm the plan. Again, going back to the first part of the recommendations. We know that the timeline sometimes can make this difficult. And so certainly the recommendations are organized by these phases, but they're very related to one another. And we know that there are some pushes and pulls and tensions within there. All right, that was my last substantive slide. I am happy to take questions at this point. And I'll just say that again, that the complete report we do expect to be fully through our publications process and available by, I think, the third week of December.
Any questions from folks?
While I wait to hear if there's questions, I'll just sincerely thank those who participated as well. It was just another time commitment on top of all your existing commitments, so we appreciate that. I do see one hand raised.
Go ahead, Ms. Gonzalez.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this beautiful presentation. I'm wondering if there's any way in which we can receive this presentation and...
Absolutely. Yeah. So the presentation will be posted after today, is my understanding. And also, when it comes to the report itself, I'll make sure that JJCC members are all added to our distribution list. There's always an email that goes out that says, like, new RAND research, here's where you can find it. And also, if others are interested in being added to that list, you're welcome to email me, and I can put you on that list. My email address is holiday, H-O-L-L-I-D-A-Y, at rand.org. So shoot me over an email with your preferred email contact information, and I'll make sure you get added to our distribution list.
Thank you so much for the presentation. We really, really appreciate it. Seeing no other hands, I'll just move us on through to the next item. We appreciate all your help and assistance on.
Thanks so much.
Sharon, are we good to move on?
Yes, sir, we are. We have no public comment on this matter, correct? Yes. We're ready to move to the next agenda item, sir.
Okay, so I'm going to move us on to final report by fiscal year. And I want to correct a mistake that we made on the agenda. It says 23-24. We're looking at 22-23. This is the Juvenile Justice Coordinating Council Comprehensive Multi-Agency Juvenile Justice Plan and JJCPA Spending Allocation Ad Hoc Committee. So I want to just go through a couple of bullets, and then I'm gonna kick it over to Ms. Santoro, who's really gonna walk us through this document. First, I just want to thank the ad hoc subcommittee for all the heavy lifting, getting this document together. The ad hoc subcommittee, as well as the probation admin team, really did a lot of work here to get this thing done. So we met nine times between September through December 2021, trying to get all of this reviewed and revised, and then also to develop a recommended spending plan. The spending plan, just so folks are aware, we'll share it today. It will be discussed at the January meeting in more detail. So I think it's been shared, which will give folks a few weeks to kind of take a look, formulate questions, and then we'll have our big discussion at our next meeting in January. So again, we'll be recommending adoption of the draft CMJJP. And really, again, cannot thank you all enough for all of your hard work. And just a couple of notes. Nine out of the nine members of the ad hoc subcommittee voted for the draft CMJJP. Seven of the nine members voted for the draft spending plan. So without further ado, I'm going to pass it over to Ms. Santoro, and she's going to walk us through this very lengthy, comprehensive document.
Thank you, Chief. Appreciate that, as Mark said. I'd like to see, Ms. Arata, can we bring up on the slide deck here the ad hoc subcommittee members, please?
I'm not sure if it's just me, but Mercy was a little difficult for me to hear you.
I could barely hear you.
How about now?
Sounds muffled, Mercy.
Sounds muffled. I'm so sorry. I met early to try to address my sound issue. I've done everything I can to raise my volume and reduce the muffledness. So I think it might be a compatibility issue with WebEx. Can you hear me enough to where we can continue with this presentation?
I think so, and Mercy, as uncomfortable as it may be, if you can move closer, I think that might help.
I'm absolutely doing that right now. So how's that? Is that better?
It is better.
It's awkward, but thank you. Sorry for the close-up. Okay, so I'm going to adjust my glasses as need be, but I do want to make sure that we acknowledge the wide representation of membership, both permanent and rotating JJCC members who served on this ad hoc. Of course, Adam Patino and myself both co-chaired the effort, and Regina Horry, Los Angeles County Department of Children and Family Services, was present. Trisha Penrose, Superior Court. Luis Rodriguez, Los Angeles County Public Defender's Office. Dr. Karen Streak, Los Angeles County Department of Mental Health. Makila Ochoy, nonprofit community-based organization, represented District 1, Supervisor of District 1. Patricia Song, nonprofit community-based organization, supervisorial District 2 rep. Josh Green, nonprofit community-based organization leader, representing supervisorial District 3. Patricia, just in case, I want to make sure I corrected that, representing supervisorial District 2. And Johnny Drawn, a nonprofit community-based organization representing Supervisorial District 4. I wanted to particularly call out their names because there was a substantial amount of volunteer time that all of these committee members brought to the table to help make this very informed update to the CMJJP, as well as to have very involved, in-depth conversations on the funding platform recommendation that'll be put forward at the January meeting. Do we have another slide that just shows the extent of our meetings, Ms. Hawkins?
Yes, Ms. Center, I'll be putting up the report that shows the dates of the meetings.
Excellent. And so, doing that, I just wanted to frame our discussion again for the benefit of new members as well as the community that's attending today's meeting, that the CMJJP was developed based on a philosophy of partnership between diverse public agencies and community-based organizations to promote positive youth development and prevent youth delinquency through shared responsibility, collaboration, and a coordinated action. So when we talk about the CMJJP and the funding slate, think of it obviously as a coordinated effort for a continuum of care for youth and families to navigate as seamlessly as possible, that we continue to work towards improving communication and navigation among service providers. So the CMJJP is such an important document, and we begin our funding recommendations with this document because it serves as both theoretical and practical foundation which programs and services are selected, implemented, evaluated, and very important, continuously improved to maximize the benefit for the youth of Los Angeles County. So this year, we spent a good deal of time thinking about transparency and accountability with regard to justice outcome reporting. And so much of the work did focus on providing greater communication and transparency around submission of information by funded organizations that's required, and making sure that the CMJJP reflects the justice outcome data requirements that are captured and required for evaluation and reporting. And so really consistent with the presentation by RAND, one of the biggest areas that we think was important was incorporating more of what we know about the RAND evaluation process, and then thinking about the gap analysis that we heard today, which we did not have access to, obviously, making this year's funding recommendations, but we were anticipating that we would have access to it. And so one of the large recommendations that is also accounted for this year is a recommendation to actually convene the CMJJP instead of in fall 2022, rather in spring 2022, so that there's an opportunity to look at the national and local landscape around juvenile justice reform, to look at the gap analysis and the best practice areas, and actually spend some time in dialogue, in discussion, and in action, just updating the CMJJP with the full committee then coming back and being convened in fall to start its process for funding allocation. So that's actually a very critical update, along with the transparency and accounting around data collection and evaluation that you're going to see. And what I'd like to do is go ahead, since we're going to be putting forward a recommendation for approval today, we'll be spending most of our meeting time today just going through the recommendations updated in the CMJJP for consideration, which would include a review of Appendix B, which outlines collection and submission requirements for JJCPA-funded programs, much in much greater detail than we've had in the past, when this data should be collected, so we haven't always been synced up, but estimated expenditures, for example, are going to be required by the funded organizations that are approved at our January meeting by October 2022 to help with informing carefully the expenditure plan review that we typically do when we look at these funding allocations. We've also outlined a process for what happens in the event an organization is not able to submit the required probation data and reporting, and what that criteria looks like. So if it's Ms. Hopkins, I do want to go ahead then and take us to the CMJJP, which you have listed here. Hoping everyone can hear me, and I'm going to move my workstation closer to where I am so that I can be heard. And obviously, as a presenter, I prepared my own notes for today's meeting, so I'm going to try to do both. But the first area that we made some discussion around and changes on was JJCC's collaborative approach to the CMJJP, which is, again, always at the forefront of our minds. And as we were reviewing this particular area, we made two changes. One, when we talk about working with advocates, we felt that part of the work groups that we should be working with directly is youth. So we added youth to the section right after you see advocates. So another area that we felt important was what are the reports that have been informing our decision-making, our collaborations, our thinking around the work that we do? And we acknowledge that two of the significant reports that should have been, that should be added are listed here as Los Angeles County Office of Violence Prevention, the Early Implementation Strategies, and the Blueprint for Peace and Healing that we've been working from, which does take up trauma-informed care, adverse early childhood experiences, frameworks we believe in the future should be incorporated in the CMJJP, as well as the Los Angeles County Alternatives to Incarceration, Alternatives to Incarceration Workgroup Final Report. So those are a couple of the framing documents and youth input that we included. And then when we go to our key stakeholders in our report, again, we're concerned with making sure youth voice is captured, and with the emergence of the Youth Justice Advisory Group, we made sure that we captured them here in our work, in our reporting, as well as the Los Angeles County Youth Commission. So Those were some of the areas really lifting up youth voice and some of the current urgent work that's happening here in the county around violence prevention and lifting up some of the reform ways too. So where we spent a good deal of time is really here in this timeline section that basically is CMJJP planning, development, and JJCPA funding allocation approval process. So this is where, when I talked about transparency and greater accountability around data collection and evaluation, it's generally found here. So where we really felt strongly about the CMJJP is there's not always enough time. Convene ourselves really early in or late September, and we were quickly end of September, October, November, and here we are at our first meeting in December making recommendations for approval. So what we'd like to see actually is, and this may be something that we do recommend every few years, that more time be allocated for a comprehensive update of the CMJJP so that we could take up those discussions around best practices and better aligning definitions with funding allocations so that we address some of the areas that we want to see this document inform as it continues to evolve as a guiding document. So we suggest that the gap analysis that was presented and will be available to all of us in December be in part used with the literature review and what we know from the other efforts that are underway here in the county and nationally, that we meet March 2022, that the ad hoc, or selected for the ad hoc subcommittee, commence meeting in 2022 and complete their work in May 2022, and reconvene in fall 2022 for the funding submission. But that time period would be used primarily to update the CMJJP. And so we also again have data information around the work that RAND is doing that we've had available in prior years. And so we do acknowledge that work and that evaluative work that has been done for the organizations and the four agencies will begin to start to inform the work of the CMJJP ad hoc subcommittee. And so that is largely taken up in step one. So that was a new step that we added, and that we use the gap analysis evaluation. We look at the gaps that may have been created by the COVID-19 pandemic that may have exacerbated service challenges, as well as geographic areas of service that we're continuing to focus on. I certainly know the AV has come up in our heat map this past year as an area, again, that there may be a gap in some services. That we look at the best practice work and scan that was presented to us and align all of our documents and our funding around positive youth development that continues to serve as a priority, and then around root causes of adversity, such as adverse childhood experiences framework and the trauma-informed care framework. So that's what just that, I know I took a lot of time on that because that was a big item actually, that we spent considerable discussion on, that we recommend to be taken up in the future CMJJP ad hoc subcommittee. Around step two, we spent some time, and this is the community survey that the JJCCCAC administers. And we felt strongly that the JJCAC should really work in coordination with the governance subcommittee to look at the survey process and see where it could be more effective and where changes might be made. One of the areas we felt strongly about that we provided in the guiding document is to formalize the survey process to improve coordination of the survey design, like, what is a valid sample size for the design or the data to be reliable, and to really work closely on outreach and engagement efforts across the supervisorial districts, and to really make sure in the survey too that we specifically called out feedback and focus directly from youth and families that are served by the funding and programs. So that was a substantial changes that we felt could strengthen the survey and its applications towards funding recommendations for the future. And then in step three, the JJCC CAC, in this area, we just really felt again that we should solicit and continue to accept feedback on the projects and programs targeted again towards youth and family wellness and community safety by increasing access to opportunities to strengthen resiliency. This was really, again, just our area of wanting to see this survey be strengthened and validate the significance of the survey as one of the foundational documents the ad hoc subcommittee refers to when making its funding decisions. In terms of governmental requests, step four, and submissions for funding, to the extent we could, we spent a good deal of time in updating Appendix B, and I'm going to walk us through what those changes were in Appendix B that would more carefully expand on what the criteria is once you receive funding and underscore the data that needs to be collected in order for probation department to assess and report youth justice outcomes while ensuring the greatest confidentiality that the department must adhere to in managing data. So step five is really another area where we were able to consolidate step six and seven from the former CMJJP. And here we focused on evaluation and incorporating more specifically RAND data that is now available to us that we did not have in past allocations. So we more specifically made this more concise and called it out and felt we could probably consolidate some of the statements around evaluation and so forth by capturing it in this one area. The step five, step 12 are standard updates to dates that are required for approving, reviewing, and approving funding and the required governing bodies that review the funding requests and approve them, as well as moving the actual allocation of funding forward through the Board of Supervisors and grant submitting requirements. So I think I want to continue, Chief, with the presentation so that there's some continuity here. And take us next to, obviously we'll open it up for questions, and take us next to an area that we also provided some updates to, LA County departments that have funding for this population. This area, we need to navigate towards that, so I want to get us all there at the same time. This area really just deals with departments that and organizations that continue to receive funding and support, and the group acknowledged that the Department of Arts and Culture, which is now listed here, should be reflected as they've received JJCC funding now for several years, and I believe funding is also included in the our growth as well as base funding allocation. So that was a change that was called out as a department that that receives funding to support this population. The next items that we should get into then will be Appendix B. So I referenced Appendix B earlier in the timeline, And the significance of Appendix B is that you more specifically included in there which strategies, whether it be primary prevention or capacity building, but which strategies should be called out with the requested funding amount, so that it's very clear for an organization that's requesting funding that one of the, you know, areas of closest consideration for us obviously is what strategy does this lift up, and more specifically too, what is the funding request under this strategy, so that we can properly evaluate grant submittals. An evaluation not only of programs but also of the grant submittals was a high priority for this year's. Spent a good deal of time up front looking at the application for funding, and even the considerations and rubric for evaluating. And that was, you could see also called out in the gap analysis of work that could be done in future CMGJPs of aligning all of those efforts. So our start to that work was making sure that when applicants understand their funding request, that they are very clear in terms of the strategies that they're supporting, and that those are all clearly outlined in the documents that that they're submitting and that we're reviewing. That was one of the biggest changes in Appendix B. But then also included in that evaluation criteria for looking at what a successful program might be for funding was also updating the notification letter once an organization receives funding. This was critical because our intent in doing this was to make sure that the organizations understood the justice outcomes that the probation department is required to report for each organization that is funded, or program rather. There may be an organization who's funded to do multiple programs. And so very clearly outline what those are, and that that each funder is required to submit those. And we detail in this letter what is required in the monthly reporting for these justice outcomes to be effectively reported and tracked. And in addition, there was good discussion on what if an applicant believes that one or more of the request data is in contradiction to any state or federal law and or regulation, and provided some guidance that the applicant must present such position for consideration and discussion. Once funds are received, the applicant agrees to provide all the listed items unless there are changed circumstances that necessitates reconsideration of what data cannot be provided. So changed circumstance includes changes in legislation and or regulations. So this was an area that we felt should be specifically called out, so there is a mutual understanding around the data collection piece. And we went further into this section, into the letter, and just again spent some time outlining the recent JJCPA state audit, the California State Auditor's Report, that brought the probation department into this place where they do need to report youth justice outcomes. So there is a direction that is required of the probation department to collect this data, and we wanted to make sure that there was clear understanding of that in the funder's letter of acknowledgement. And again, we listed out all of the data that is required and when it is to be submitted, so that there was a clear understanding of expectations. And it was important that that we indicated that required additional data, it must be assessed and looking at program effectiveness at reducing juvenile justice crime. For the full evaluation period or for the full duration of funding, and that failure to submit the required data to probation may result in loss of grant funds as one of the conditions that we wanted to be clear about in this process. The other area, Ms. Hawkins, I wanted to make sure that I made a notation of because we're not going to go over report by report unless there's specific questions because we have several tables included that are required each year that are updated, including your geographic maps and so forth. But one of the areas I wanted to call out is a notation on student absenteeism. So typically we do provide, probation does provide data on know if parents trying to get to that. The student absenteeism, we see that as it's Appendix E. D. And in there, that data will not be reported due to COVID-19 pandemic, and the CDE has determined that the 2019-20 absenteeism data is not valid for a variety of reasons that we know. So, in some instances, in particular, the student absenteeism data was not included this year because of the CDE direction. Otherwise, we've included the, you know, go to it, or we can just acknowledge it, I think is appropriate. The 2021 CACJJCC survey findings. We've updated the findings as well, too. As you know, as a collective, all of this information is critical to informing the funding recommendations. So we begin our work with the CMJJP update, and as I've shared or tried to show evidence of, there was a great deal of consideration for using, thank you, Sharon, we'll just skim this if this document is available for review now. It's been posted with this document. Again, we were really looking at program evaluation effectiveness, data around justice outcomes, maintaining the continuum of care in the landscape of change in juvenile justice reform, as well as considering the COVID-19 implications and challenges that have been presented to many of the funded organizations and how we can continue to support them in overcoming those challenges, as well as thinking to the future and using all the rich data, including the gap analysis, to spend a more weighted and considerable time in updating the CMJJP for the 2023-2024 funding year. Chief, that concludes my presentation on behalf of the ad hoc subcommittee, and I think we're available to address any questions or comments.
Thank you so much for that, Mercy. We really appreciate it. I did want to, before we go to questions and comment, I did just want to highlight, and I don't know that we need to show it, but on the heat map, just what that shows is 5 zip codes where most of our youth on probation reside. And there really wasn't too much of a difference between 2020 and 2021. But I just wanted to, oh, there it is. Thank you, Sharon. So if we zoom in there, you see portions of the Antelope Valley are there, while the rest are concentrated in those zip codes that you see. So yeah, not a significant change from last year, but just wanted to highlight that for folks to get a sense of where our kids are residing. And at this point, I suppose we can open it up to questions from the group. Questions, comments, anything that needs to be clarified. Mr. Mendoza, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the presentation. I just had a question. just was curious of why wasn't you just imagine mentioned in the report, or yeah, that's just my question. Why is it even on the plan at all?
Jump in. I think because it was an unintentional omission. So the Youth Justice Advisory Group is mentioned, but I think it's a great point, Kent, and if it may be worth an easy amendment adding it to, I cannot remember which page it was on, Mercy, but there is a list.
Yeah, it's 14. So we listed it as a Youth Justice Advisory Group, but we can address that.
Josh.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the presentation, and I was wondering, I think I didn't see this, and if it is on there...
Baby, and this is Regina, just really briefly. So just listening, I think it's Father Boyle who said the best way to stop...
Okay. Sorry, Ms. Gonzalez, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess my question, I was saying I might have missed this, so if it is on there, apologies. But I was wondering about funding for the Youth Commission.
So for the CMJJP update, we don't consider funding per se. That would be part of the funding recommendation, which we're going to take up in the January meeting. But we did acknowledge as a key stakeholder, and we did add the Los Angeles County Youth Commission.
Thank you.
With us now? Sorry, we were, so Gloria had already been speaking. So Regina, now can we hear from you? Ms. Corey?
We can come back to her, perhaps. Any other questions or comments on the plan? Sharon, before we move to a vote, I'm wondering if we want to take public comment first here.
Yes, so we do. And actually, before we just as an announcement, we had a few people join the meeting, our members. We had Regina Gorey join us, Juan Navarro from nonprofit community-based drug and alcohol provider, Tapao Osborne from LACO, and Mr. Zachary, Reginald Zachary, joined by phone. He had some challenges entering the meeting. I'm not sure if he's still there by phone. Just to let you know that. And also announcement about the PowerPoint for RAND that will be posted on our website. And for now, we have 12. We have 10 public comments. Mr. Chair, how much time would you like to provide?
Ten. I think it's best if we do 1 minute, given the time. Okay. Sorry, folks, I apologize for that, but I think 1 minute's best here.
All right, so just a moment, we'll start calling in. So our first person is Jai Phillips, so just a moment. We'll put up the clock. We'll be going rather fast. Who's the second person? So the next person up behind Jai Phillips will be George Rio, so please be prepared, Mr. Rio. All right, so Mr. Phillips, can you hear us?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you. So 1 second. When the clock comes up, you'll have 1 minute for the time you begin speaking. So just a second while the clock comes up. No. All right, well, where's our clock? We're doing our best today. Here, try again. Share the clock. Here we go. All right, here we go. All right, Mr. Phelps, whenever you begin speaking, you have 1 minute.
Okay. The California Commission Immune Foundation just encourages the JJCC to fully fund the request for $9.7 million for the public-private partnership grant-making program. Currently, the draft budget allocates $5.8 million for Ready to Rise. This represents a 40% decrease in funding, and unfortunately, such a decrease would result in less youth serve and a reduced program analysis and evaluation supports for funded organizations. Currently, today, we are serving 14,000 youth, unduplicated youth, through deep and ongoing programs with nearly 400,000 programmatic touch points throughout the year. And of these youth, approximately 80% identify as Black or Latinx and represent seven priority populations such as LGBTQ, justice involved, foster, housing insecure, alternatives, continuation school students, transition age youth, and gang involved youth as well. Of the 49 organizations, I would like to notate that 69% of those are BIPOC-led organizations, and 35% of those are of a budget of less than $1 million.
I say thank you. Sorry, time's up. When it's a minute, it goes quick. So just a minute. So our next person up is George Rio, and the person after that is Samia Gentle. So Ms. Gentle, be ready. You'll be next up after George Rio. So George Rio, can you speak so we can hear you? Or requested unmute. All right. So, all right, sir, just a moment while we put the clock up. Once the clock begins, you'll have 1 minute. And again, Ms. Gentle, be ready. We'll be calling you next. We're having trouble with the clock. There we go. All right, so whenever you begin speaking, you have 1 minute.
Why did advocates want to shut down school-based probation? Because it is a law enforcement agency running it. They are targeting any law enforcement agency, no matter what their benefits are to the juveniles. They don't care about it. Let's look at what their justice reform has given us so far. Increased crime, public smash and grabs, broad daylight looting of stores. Stores are shutting down these communities because of it. Why? Because the juveniles know they can get away with it now. There are advocates here who want to give diversion to some of these criminals. This is documented and public knowledge. It means they want the cases closed. They want the criminals released as if it never happened. Justice reform, as imagined by these advocates, is legalization of crime. Target right now is school-based probation. They will continue on for there. Without consequences, we're moving to a society without law or safety for the citizens. Think about what is going on. Is this the world you want to live in? Continue school-based probation through JJCPA funding.
All right, thank you. So our next person is Samia Gentle. We're calling her into the meeting. She's not an attendee. It takes a moment to do that. And the person after that will be Troy Bennett. The person after that will be, Dean Cloutier. Sorry, I probably butchered the name. All right, so we're trying to reach Ms. And the phone is calling her through WebEx. We're waiting for it to play greeting. I think we're going to go to the next person. So it isn't getting through. We're going to start really calling them ahead of time, the ones that we're going to call so they know. The next person is Troy Bennett, who's an attendee in the meeting, and we're going to elevate him so he can speak. So we're going to request an unmute. And we've requested the unmute, Mr. Bennett. When you can speak, please do so so we know we can hear you. Mr. Bennett? Oh gosh. Okay. Let's try that out. All right, so we're gonna move on and come back to Mr. Bennett. What happens is we send a request to unmute. And then on the other side, we need you to watch your computer or your device so that you can unmute. So our next person is going to be Ezekiel Nishiyama. He's in as an attendee, so there he is. All right, so Ezekiel.
Hello.
Hi. All right, just a moment while we get up the clock. And when we do, you'll have 1 minute. Let me begin speaking.
Hello, thank you for the time today. Ezekiel Nishiyama with the Anti-Racism Coalition. I'm calling in to speak to the experience of school-based probation. As a young person who experienced school-based probation, I can say that it causes a young person a lot of trauma. Yes, I hear many school officials calling in to talk about how they want the school-based probation program, but neither did my mother know the harms of school-based probation as it was leaving me. Neither did none of my parents know how these programs help, did not help me or did not help me with any resources in the community. To talk about school-based probation as helping our youth, where are the youth that are calling in and talking about their successful stories with probation? I hear many youth calling in to talk to the fact that probation has left them with trauma and many and left them in a cycle of incarceration. So for the many school officials, please just look at all the other opportunities that there are in youth diversion and prevention. Thank you for the time.
Thank you. Next person is Keish Irving, and we're calling this person in. So if you're out there, the next person after that, the next person after that will be Janet Denise Kelly. So we're trying Keish Irving. We're calling. We're also calling them on our cell phones to make sure that they're ready to come up for them, to be ready for our call. All right, so we're going to go to the next one. We're going to keep trying. Our next person, as I mentioned, was Janet Denise Kelly, who is in the meeting as an attendee. And we're going to ask her to unmute. And she's no longer there. Okay. With us. Our next person will be Priti Paresh. So, all right, we've requested an unmute. You're now unmuted. Can you speak, please?
Hi, my name is Priti Paresh.
Hi, thanks. Great. Now we have the clock up, so whenever you begin, we'll give you that way, we give you your full minute. So, whenever you begin speaking.
Great, thank you so much. Greetings, everybody. My name is Kruti Parekh, and I'm the coordinator for the Los Angeles Youth Uprising Coalition. I really appreciate the RAND Corporation for doing their presentation that really highlighted experiences from young people, and also really want to appreciate Ezekiel, who just spoke, a young person, and also really want to appreciate Kent Mendoza and Anti-Recidivism Coalition and other members of LAYUP that helped get Ezekiel to this meeting where he can inform you. I think what this showcases is that this process is extremely flawed, that we don't have more young people participating. Despite the hard work and good intention of the subcommittee members, probation really needs to be removed as the administrator of these funds. The funds are not getting to the ground fast enough. I can tell you time and time and time again of crisis situations that need support, and it's getting stuck in the county, and it needs to come
Thank
down
you.
To the ground.
I'm sorry. Thank you. Your time's up. Then it goes quickly. So just a moment, and we're calling this person. Now we're calling Janet Kelly. Thanks for your patience, sir. I'm actually a little slow today for the phone calls. We're going to try, just a moment, we're going to try something. We're trying something. We're having some issues on this and trying to call people into the meeting. So Okay, so... Sorry again. Mr. Chair, we're having trouble calling them in, so the only way we can do this is call them on the phone. And I know that's not a great system, but that's all we have left. So for some reason, WebEx is not, the calls are not going through WebEx, so that we could put them on the speaker.
Sharon, that would like to make public comment.
Thank you. Oh, just number one up, we have eight. So we've already heard from, but the number is going up, so we've already heard from four, so we're just 15 to four. So we're trying each other.
Hey Sharon, I'm wondering as a suggestion to try to save time, if the folks that are still needing to do public comment, if they can be moved to panelists, and then, because calling in, we've realized time and time again that it sometimes doesn't work or folks don't answer, so wondering if we can choose like a method that's going to be efficient.
Thank you, Gloria. Yes, we could, but when they call in, we can't see who they are. As I mentioned in the past, they're caller number 9, caller number 10. So if they're already in the meeting as an attendee, then we do elevate them. But if they're if they call into the meeting, they're caller number 9, so we don't know who that is. So we're doing the best we can, but thank you. We do appreciate it. We always try to improve this process. We did reach one on the phone. So I turned my phone all the way up, and this is Elizabeth Compos?
Yes.
Okay, all right, just a moment. So we have you on the phone, but I'm going to put this next to the speaker on my cell phone, on our laptop, so best we can do. The speaker on my laptop is up to 100%. So we'll tell you when, as soon as you begin speaking, you'll have a minute, and then we'll tell you when the minute is up, since you can't see it. All right, so whenever you begin. Go ahead.
Let's pause the clock. We've lost the speaker here.
Oh, sorry, Ms. Campos, just a moment. I'm sorry, sir, what did you say? You couldn't hear
us? Can we start the clock over for Ms. Campos, please?
Okay. All right, so we're having some issues with connectivity, I think. All right, so can you please begin again, and then we'll restart in the talk.
Okay, so I'm the teacher at the Long Beach Junior.
Still don't have you, Ms. Campos. I'm so sorry. I think all of our devices realize it's 3:45 on Friday.
Okay, wait 1 second.
Well, Sharon, let's try
one more time.
Yeah, it's got to be the last try, Sharon.
All right, Ms. Campos, let's try one more time.
Okay, you can hear me then?
Let's give it a shot. Go ahead.
Okay, so I get asked what it's like to teach at the JDRC, and I say that we're trying to get the kids to get back on track academically and behaviorally, and we talk a lot about our program, but something I wanted to mention was that the site-based probation officers are a big part. They're identifying the kids that are struggling and need to get into our program, but they help transition them back. And I had a student, for example, that never had attended regular high school. Her attendance was bad, she'd been locked up a lot, She was so excited to go be a regular senior, and the probation officer at the site was the person who understood her, understood where she was coming from. She didn't have to explain herself. And I don't know if that girl would have graduated in June and been as successful in the overwhelming world of a brand new high school if she hadn't had that site-based probation officer. So our program is more than just an isolated program that helps the kids in one place. It actually connects within the whole school system, and they're really important, and I do think they get overlooked sometimes.
We have the next person, so this is Clara Keene. Ms. Keene? This means, hi. Oh, wait, 1 second. Just a minute. We're going to set you close to the speaker. All right, so when you begin speaking, you'll have 1 minute. Hopefully people can hear it. Wait 1 second. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. As ARC staff and a former educator, I'm respectfully opposing the $4 million budget allocation to the LA County Probation for School-Based Supervision that's currently recommended for next fiscal year. The Board of Supervisors has endorsed the Youth Justice Reimagined Plan through multiple unanimous votes, and YGR recommends phasing out school-based probation. It's the responsibility of the JJCC to stop funding this program, and they should not fund school-based probation again this year. Last year's CMJJP showed that the number of youth on LA probation supervision has decreased by 30% over 3 years, and this number has continually been decreasing over the last decade, which begs the question, why are we wasting precious JJCPA funds by sending them to a rapidly declining program? School should be a place of learning, not criminalization. JJCC should listen to youth, the Board of Supervisors, the Youth Justice Reimagined Plan, and not fund school-based probation any longer.
Is Dean Cloutier. Hi, hello. Is this Dean Cloutier? All right, when you begin speaking, you'll have 1 minute.
I was calling to voice my support for JJCC and school base because they're an asset to our campus here at Van Nuys High School. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye. Hi. Okay, we have Samia Gentle. So Ms. Gentle, when you begin speaking, you'll have 1 minute. We'll let you know when you're done.
Okay, so I can start now?
Yes.
We don't have her, Sharon.
Sharon, I believe you're muted.
Oh, I'm muted. Sorry. Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, I'm sorry. So we were letting her know that we're having issues. So she did stop speaking. All right, so our next person. So our next person is Ruth Tyson. Okay, she's in as an attendee, I think. The last three are attendees, so she will be easier. Just a moment while we Ruth, I've made you a panelist. Sending you request to unmute. Please unmute. so you can speak. There you go. All right, so when you're ready to speak, you have 1 minute. Ruth? We can't hear you yet. Ruth? All right, let's try another one. All right, we're going to try another one until we can get a hold of. Yes, now we can. All right, so when you begin speaking, you have 1 minute.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Okay. So when you begin speaking, you have 1 minute.
I represent the Supervisors Union. The union continues to support school-based and is asking the JJCC to make sure the funding remains. I read an article this morning, and it was a real piece about reform and how many people of color are being victimized at alarming rates because of the change in policies and the reimaging experiment. It's harming our youth. The taxpayers don't feel safe. Reform shouldn't include an 87-year-old woman murdered in her home, business owners afraid to do business in the community, youth advocate workers murdered in a residential facility because there is no accountability. Improve the system by adding to the system. Don't destroy the system. You guys are single-handedly destroying our communities by getting rid of probation youth programs that work. School-based work. Adding efficient programs is a plus, but not at the cost of voiding out programs that we know work. School-based is one of the most efficient community programs that exist in probation. CBOs are running with the money with no clue about the population we serve. Thinking you know a real-life experience is a difference. Right, education is a difference.
I'm sorry. Thank you. Your time's up. Thank you. All right, so our next person, we're trying to reach, oh, there's two more. We're trying one more time to reach them. We've had trouble reaching them. We call and, oh, we have one, we think. Just a minute. All right, so we have to try to do the speaker again. So, hi, Mr. Bennett. All right, we're going to try to have you speak into the, end of the meeting. Go ahead, please. Whenever you begin, you have 1 minute.
Can't hear him, Chair.
Mr. Bennett, sorry, just a minute. They said they can't hear you, but if you said you're in the meeting, we're going to find you. Just a minute. There you are. Okay, we're gonna send you a request to unmute. Yeah. Wait, I think we can hear you speak, Mr. Bennett.
Can you hear me through the meeting now?
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
Okay, well, thank you. And well, good afternoon again. Thank you for allowing me this time. My name is Troy Bennett. And I'm an administrator, and I've been an administrator for several years, middle school level and high school level. I've had a bit of experience working with school-based probation officers since the early 2000s, as a matter of fact. And my experience is as follows. We've had a great collaborative relationship. We've been able to support students, families, to set students up for success. And I can just think of and name of several, including this year already. We've had a graduate from my high school, and we collaborated on what would be best for this student. But our probation officers, they build relationships, they're mentors, and they do a great job. Please continue to fund this program. We need them.
Thank you, sir.
We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, we finished.
We have
finished public comment, and I'll be sending written public comments, and then that means we are then ready to take a motion and a second. We actually did it out of order. So we'll have to create a motion for the CMPD feature.
Thank you, Sharon, for getting us through that. Thank you for all the speakers for your patience and perseverance. We want to make sure that your voices are heard. So, as Sharon mentioned, we'll put it to the group for a motion to approve the CMJJP plan.
Okay.
for Adam and the so the agenda item that we were that we're on included the JJCPA spending allocation, but we didn't discuss that as a group, correct? We simply went through the CMJJP, although the vast majority, if not all, of the comments were about the spending allocation. So I guess just as a procedural matter, two questions. One, do we intend to discuss it as a group today? And then two, just on the CMJJP, I do want to just make a motion to amend and add the Youth Justice Reimagined report. I think we flagged that that was missing from the reports. So I can make that motion now, but before we do that, I thought it might be worth just procedurally thinking through the other half of the agenda item.
Yeah, the other half is there. The plan really is to discuss that at the January meeting at this point. So provide folks with enough time to review the spending and then have that discussion at the January meeting.
And Chief, I wanted to, if it's appropriate at this meeting, just provide some context. Discussion at the January meeting, it's not our intent to go line to delve into any line items, but just the overall framing of it to provide the JJCC members an opportunity, and then as well as for the public as they prepare for the January meeting with the discussion. So if it's appropriate, that's a separate update. Take it, or if it's appropriate,
So you want to do, sorry, Mercy, just so I'm understanding, you're offering to do a larger, it's a kind of a higher level overview of the spending?
A very high level overview.
Okay. I'm looking at time. I want to be mindful of that. If we can do that, I'm certainly open to a very high level, but again, we can't get into the line items. We won't have time to do that. We would need to move that to our January meeting. We also want folks to have an opportunity to review what the subcommittee has created at this point.
So if that's... Adam, just procedurally, I'm sorry to interrupt you. So forgive me if I'm misremembering. Historically, I think we've tried to present the funding recommendation for feedback in December so that we could then, if there needed to be any adjustments, try to adjust it by January. But I may be misremembering that, and feedback can be given at the top of January and then incorporated and brought back to another JJCC meeting. I don't know if Sharon or anybody else can speak to that.
Yeah, I'll defer to the admin team. I'm not aware of the history there.
Coleman mentioned that although we included the funding information, it would be taken up at the January meeting. If you remember, the January meeting is where we have the rules of the vote, where we talk about pulling out each different agenda items for people to review and talk about, and then they would say things like, well, each member was going through and saying, I'd like to accept these items to look at, and they would call out the numbers. You may remember that from January 2021 and also of last year. So that's the way we looked at the fiscal in January.
So in theory, we'll be getting feedback and voting to approve in January the same day.
Yes, that's what we did in January this year. I may recall. But at the December meeting, he just said, I think it was a very high-level overview that Mercy's offering, and then indicated that it would be January when they would have the deep discussions.
So I suppose I'll put it to the group at this point if we want to go through a high-level overview of the spending. And then, Gloria, I see your hand is raised. I don't know if that's from before or if you have a question, comment.
Now, I believe Oscar Canales had requested to speak, wondering if you all realize that.
But actually, we just received two. So which one is it?
One for Oscar Canales.
Just a minute. We have to check our list because we get it. It's an email. Yeah. We didn't get an email. We didn't receive an email from Oscar. We haven't received an email. No, we haven't received an email. So the process, as I mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, is, and on the agenda, is to please send us an email. So if he wants to speak, have him please send an email. And then he can, if he's in the meeting now, please send us an email so that we can place you on for the last agenda item. Or this one. We have one more for here. let's clean up where we are. So we have one more public comment under where we were for the presentation. And then you want to talk about a high level, whether or not you want to do a high level overview. So,
Mr. Sharon, do we need to take it now or can we take it at the end? The comment.
You can take it at the end. And that might be easier. And then that way, if Oscar Canales gets us the information, then we'll be able to include him as well. So if it's up to you. So are we looking at doing a high level overview?
I'll defer to the group on that. If folks are in favor of doing that, we'll proceed. Otherwise, we'll keep moving through the agenda. Are there other folks who would like to do a high-level overview of the spending plan at this point?
Let's ask every member that would like that to just raise their hands in the meeting so we can see. Or on the machine.
Okay. That's plenty. Let's proceed, Mercy, please.
All right.
Again,
thanks.
This is Mercy Santoro, and on behalf of the CMJJP Ad Hoc Subcommittee, I am presenting a very high-level overview of 2022-23 funding recommendations that have been attached here to the meeting agenda. Some of the instructive feedback that we wanted to provide to note that the costs in yellow, the base funding recommended one-time growth.
Mercy, can you speak up? Sorry, it's hard to hear you. I'm sure everybody else can't hear.
So the yellow columns are the ones that should be referred to when you're trying to look at what the actual recommended funding allocation is. I also want to acknowledge light yellow areas here to the right list the funding strategies, primary prevention, for example, as well as the percentage of funding that was allocated to that particular funding strategy. The total amount of base funding that was available for this upcoming funding cycle was $27,500,000. You'll see listed in the bottom of the column here. And then the total base funding allocation was $17,406,321. Those were the total funding amounts that totaled $44,906,312,000. The total funding requests that we received for the 2022-23 year was $62,633,000. The gap in terms of the request of and based on available funding was $17,727,000 approximately. So wanted to give the background in terms of available funding, total funding requests, and to very briefly frame up the process that the ad hoc subcommittee looked at given the variance in the funding availability and the actual funding. And I think instead of going into extensive detail, what I want to do is just, say that we looked carefully at the 2019-20 funding allocation, since that was the last funding allocation that was prior to the anomalies experienced by COVID-19. That other areas we looked at were taking into account the percentage of allocation of funding to CBPOs as part of, making sure that organizations could continue to support the CBO-funded grant or CBO-funded allocations. We also looked at the $622,401 emerging fund dollars from last fiscal year and we brought that back into the budget. We considered carryover amounts and estimated expenditures for the program areas. And there had been some carryovers for organizations that couldn't implement their programs due to various factors largely associated with COVID-19. And we wanted to ensure that the funds are spent down as directed for. And then funding considerations were also based on completeness of applications. So I shared with you how important the evaluation process was in reviewing the applications. There was also lengthy discussion about the ability of this funding sources to offset cost of living increases, which concluded that this funding source is not designed to keep up with those cost of living resources, that organizations that are funded would need to continue to assess that. And so we also wanted to maintain continuity with the growth and base allocations that have historically been provided for. So while there were many changes in the levels of funding to organizations, and there were other factors that we had to consider, certainly forefront was continuity of services in light of the changing landscape due to COVID-19 and the other countywide initiatives around, certainly juvenile justice reform. We had to make tough decisions, saw that greater investments in YDD as well as the Antelope Valley continue to be areas of funding interest or priorities for the ad hoc subcommittee. That is the framing of the funding recommendations. We will not discuss line items today as the chief suggested, but rather we wanted to provide some context as we prepare for the January meeting, which is when the full funding slate will be presented. Thank you for the opportunity to provide the highlights and background information, Chief, and fellow subcommittee members.
Thank you so much, Mercy. Really appreciate it. Questions from folks?
Adam, this is Josh. This isn't a question as much as I, since I wasn't able to attend the last subcommittee meeting, I do just want to share, because I think it's relevant to the comments we heard today, that I hope people continue to show up, is I hear a lot of agreement about young people needing resources as it relates to schools and their experience inside of schools, but I think there is still a robust conversation to be had about whether this particular funding source is the right one to support what is a portion of the school-based probation budget. And I just want to encourage people, we're about to vote to approve the CMJJP, but to look at the principles, the guiding principles that are embedded there in preparation for our meeting in January, because I think there's a lot there that can help us collectively work through the comments. I think there was, a lot of agreement about the needs, but I think maybe we're talking past each other. So I just want to encourage people to use the document we're going to vote on today so that we can be prepared to have that conversation in a real robust way in January.
This is John Drone. I would like to build on that, Josh, and state that I hope that we can also put politics aside and put a priority on the people, because that's who's really at need at this time in our local community. So I look forward to us taking a deeper dive, but this is not complete by far, but it definitely is a snapshot of what we have achieved up until this point. So, thank you.
Can I just add something quickly too? And I would just say that let's always, we always hear young people speak in this meeting, so let's really prioritize those voices from the young people, because they're the ones that are going through this thing. So I just wanted to make sure that we always prioritize their voices, because at the end of the day, it's them. The kids are the ones that are going to go through all of this. So just wanted to really emphasize that, because I hear a lot of adults, but I think young people are the people we need to listen to.
Ms. Gonzalez.
I appreciate all of the public comment, but
wanting to reground and center, like, what the mission is for this specific body, and that's to allocate funding to prevent further incarceration of young people, right, and to support the young people that might be struggling, that they don't continue to enter carceral systems. And so, you know, I think it needs to be exactly what Kent is saying, and that's prioritizing the young people and their needs and making sure that there's money flowing specifically to the ground to support young people thrive, that it doesn't stay stuck in a bureaucratic system, right, but that it's intentionally placed there. I also want to echo Youth Justice Reimagined and the importance for this body to read that report and look at exactly what it is that's happening in the county and the transformation that's going on that is not around carceral systems, but that's really about humanizing young people through a humanizing young person lens and not a criminal justice lens.
Thank you. Ms. Osborne?
Hello, just really quickly, I just want to ensure that I'm actually looking at the report correctly. So that's I just want additional clarification. That's all I want. Just in ensuring, we have the funding request, so that may be what the agency actually requested. Then what was actually recommended to give them is in the yellow. Is that correct? And then in the other portion, in the, I don't know, greenish area? the last section, that is how much of those, which areas will those funds be used? Is that correct?
So the yellow portion is the funding recommendation. That is correct.
Okay.
To the right. And to the furthest right, the light yellow is the funding based on the strategic directives and the CMJJP. Or the strategies, rather, and columns, the green columns, indicate funding from previous funding years.
Right.
Okay. And
thank you. Awesome. I just wanted to make sure that I was looking at it correctly, because it said the recommended one-time funding, and I was like, each year. I got it now, though. Thank you.
Okay. Again, being mindful of time, we do need to vote to approve the CMJJP. So can I get a motion?
I think Josh had started to create a motion to amend. So
I think technically we need a motion to approve and then a motion to amend.
Yeah. So I just wanted to know that we'll include you so that you're part of the conversation. Okay. So we have a motion from anyone.
I have a motion to approve the CMJJP.
I'm sorry, is that you, Tricia?
It was.
Okay, thanks. All right, do I have a second? That was you, Juan, correct? Juan Navarro?
Yes.
All right, thank you. All right, do we have any more JJCC member discussion?
I would just move to reflect Kent's suggestion to include the Youth Justice Reimagined report by the Burns Institute from November 2020 in this section.
Okay, so that's our, so what are we doing? Now we're doing an amended motion, so it's just a minute. Okay, can you phrase the motion so that we'll have an accurate motion to, would you please, Patricia?
Sure, I move to amend to include the W. Haywood Burns Institute's report on Youth Justice Reimagined from November 2020 in the list of reports. I don't know what section it is. In the section listing reports to inform the CMJJP.
All right, thank you. And then who's our second? Was that you going to be Josh?
Yes, my second.
Okay. Actually, had Juan, didn't we? Okay. All right, so you have the second. All right, now we have new member discussion. Any more discussion on this? Sound like it. All right. Okay, do we have any public comment on this? No, right? Any public comment on this? On the plan? We have no public comment, so Mr. Chair, with that we can... I'm sorry. All right, so we've had a second, and we have no public comment, so we can begin the vote.
Okay.
All right, so Mr. Chair?
Yes.
All right, Board of Supervisors, in case they've joined us, I don't see them. Alternate Public Defender's Office? All right, Department of Children and Family Services?
Yes.
Department of Mental Health? Department of Public Health, Tiana Lima?
Yes.
From the Public Social Services, Javon Smith, in case she's joined us, I don't remember seeing her. District Attorney's Office? Juvenile Court, Tricia Penrose?
Yes.
Lakewood Parks and Rec, Mercy Santoro? Oh, okay. It looks like you said yes, but I think you're muted.
Yes.
Thank you. All right, Los Angeles County Office of Education, to Kyle Osborne? Oh, yeah, I saw somebody light up as a caller.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, good. All right, thank you. All right, Los Angeles Unified School District, Dr. Miranda?
Yes.
Thank you. Los Angeles Police Department, Haley Smith, in case she's joined us. Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department, Lieutenant Madrano, I don't see him in there. Office of Diversion and Reentry, Division of Youth Diversion Development, Mr. Biden? Thank you. Public Defender's Office?
Yes.
City of Los Angeles Mayor's Office, Mr. Zachary, who joined us. I don't know if he's still on the call. Let's see him. All right, nonprofit community-based drug and alcohol provider, Juan Navarro?
Yes.
Nonprofit supervisorial district representative, Juan Piquito Ochoa?
Yes.
I'm sorry, what was that? Was that you, Piquito? Maybe it was somebody else speaking. Is there somebody else that's not muted? Fish. Piquito, are you out there? Okay, all right, so we can't find Mr. Ochoa. Our nonprofit CBS Advisory Representative for District 2, Patricia Song?
Yes.
Nonprofit CBS Advisory Representative District 3, Josh Green? Nonprofit CBS Advisory District Representative District 4, Johnny Drown? Okay, somebody is. Johnny, are you there?
Yes.
Johnny, oh, sorry, all right, so your vote is yes?
Yes.
Confirming. All right, thank you. Nonprofit Supervisor of District 5, Mr. Dutton? I see him saying yes.
There you are.
So is it a yes or a no for your vote?
Yes, I'm here, and yes, it's a vote. Yeah,
vote
yes.
All right, Dr. Price, At-Large Community Representative?
Yes.
All right, thank you. And At-Large Community Representative Diego Rodriguez? Thank you. At-Large Community Representative Gloriana Gonzalez?
Yes.
All right, thank you. At-Large Community Representative Kent Mendoza? Thank you. At-Large Community Representative Jeanette Lomelli, in case she's joined us. Let's see her. Just a moment. Mr. Chair, you have 21 yeses, no noes. No abstention. Motion passes.
Great, thank you. So I'm going to move us quickly to the presentation of the JJCC Master Calendar for 2022. Sharon, are you going to share that with folks so we can go through it?
Yes, sir, just a moment. I was trying to...
Thank you.
Pulling it up, just a moment. Here it comes. Thank you.
Okay. So you see the dates there. I do think that while we hope to someday meet in person, we know that there's a lot of things that are working against us here. And we have this new variant and some other things going on, obviously. So it continues to be really problematic. So for now, until you hear otherwise, we'll continue to meet virtually. So I suppose we just need a motion to approve the calendar, and that'll keep us moving through here.
Yes, we do. We need a motion and a second, and then we can start discussion.
I'll move that we tentatively accept this calendar events for 2022.
Thank you, Mr. Dutton. Do we have a second? Is that you, Dr. Strike?
Yes, it is.
All right, thank you. All right, do we have any member discussion on this item? I see Gloria's hand up, and I'm not sure. Gloria, is that for this item?
He's for that.
No problem. All right, do we have anyone that would like to speak on this? I don't see any other hands up. We do have one public comment. Yes, sir, we have one public comment for C. If you're ready, this is, yeah, you can take the calendar down. So, we'll call it that we're changing the person to an attendee. This is Alejandro Flores Valdi. Oh, we have Oscar. Oh, Oscar's for the last item. All right, so just a moment. So, Alejandro in the meeting. We can call him at the end so that we can continue, Mr. Chair. That'll make it easier.
Can you call him?
Okay, she's going to try. I'm sorry. Just a moment. Doesn't appear to be going through. We're going to go ahead and move that person to the end as well, so we can go ahead and at least work through this item and prepare and see if we can reach it for the next item, if that's all right, Mr. Chair. All right, thank you. All right, so at this point, then, we're ready for the vote. So this is to approve the tentative calendar. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
All right, Board of Supervisors, in case you've joined us. Alternate Public Defender's Office?
Yes.
Department of Children and Family Services?
Yes.
Department of Mental Health? Department of Public Health?
Yes.
Right. Department of Public Social Services, in case she's joined us. District Attorney's Office?
Yes.
Juvenile Court? Lakewood Parks and Rec?
Yes.
Los Angeles County Office of Education?
Yes.
Los Angeles Unified School District? Dr. Miranda, she's still with us? See her. Maybe she's not with us. Listen, are you there, Dr. Miranda? I'll have somebody else speak. All right. Los Angeles Police Department, in case they joined us. Los Angeles Sheriff's Department, in case they joined us. Office of Diversion and Reentry Division of Youth Diversion Development, Mr. Valle?
Yes.
Are you with us? All right. Thank you, sir. All right. County Defender's Office?
Yes.
City of Los Angeles Mayor's Office, in case he's back. Nonprofit community-based drug and alcohol provider, Juan Navarro. Nonprofit CBS of Rosario, Representative District 1, Bikila Ochoa, in case he's back. Nonprofit CBS of Rosario, Representative District 2, Patricia Song.
Yes.
All right, there. Thank you. Nonprofit CBS of Rosario, Representative District 3, Josh Green.
Yes.
Nonprofit CBS of Rosario, Representative District 4, Johnny Drawn. Johnny?
Yes.
All right, thank you. I take it back to the yes. Right. They almost called in my name. Hold on 1 minute, let's take a second. Yeah, we can hear you, Captain. Representative District 5, Mr. Dutton?
Yes.
All right, thank you. Outrise Committee Representative Dr. Price?
Yes.
All
Yes.
Thank you. Allies Committee Representative Diego Rodriguez. I see you nodding. Can you say yes out loud for us, Ms. Diego? Thank you. Allies Committee Representative Gloria Janet Gonzalez. Gloria? Try to unmute you. I see you're muted just a minute. We've sent a request to Gloria to unmute.
Gloria? Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, now we can. So your vote is yes?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. All right, at large committee representative Kent Vendosa.
Yes.
All right, thank you. At large committee representative Jeanette Lamelli, in case she's joined us. All right, Mr. Chair, just a moment. Mr. Chair, we have 21 yeses, no noes, no abstention, and motion passes.
Thanks, everybody. So let's move to the last two public comments. I think two, maybe more. 1 minute.
Yes, sir. In the meantime, I'll be sending out the written public comments to the members.
Hello. Can I begin with the public comment?
Just a moment when we put up the clock. Once the clock is up, you have a minute from the time you begin speaking.
My name is Adrian Vasquez. I'm from the California Community Foundation Program Associate there. I'd like to reference this to item 5B. Reducing the annual budget would have a dramatic effect on the momentum of collective impact model, as evidenced by the following projections. One, approximately 5,000 fewer youth served in 2022-2023. Second, a 40% decline in number of organizations supported by Ready to Rise. Or three, a steep decline in the grant award amounts to continue the support of 50 organizations. Thank you again for the continued support of Ready to Rise Public-Private Partnership. Our organization remains committed to continuing to support the partnership. Ready to Rise represents a bright and a valuable asset in the county's vision to strengthen more alternatives to incarceration. We look forward to working with the council, LA County Probation Department, and the future of Ready to Rise grantees. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, our next person. So we have Oscar Canales. So just a moment, he's an attendee in the meeting. We're going to find him and unmute him. Sent the request to unmute. So Oscar, can you speak so we can hear you?
Hello?
All right, great. Thank you. Just a moment while we bring up the clock. Once you begin speaking, you have 1 minute.
Hi, my name is Oscar Canales with the Anti-Recidivism Coalition. I would love to be able to uplift the voices of people on the call whose interests are for the better of the children, to be able to have the proper funding that for over 500 years we have been waiting to be able to have this funding. Meaning, I want to be able to uplift, first off and foremost, where these LA County
Just a moment, Oscar, stop the clock for a second. We're going to back up the clock about 10 more seconds. Because he broke out. I don't know if it happened for everyone else, but it sounded like he broke out and we couldn't hear him. So,
hello?
Hi, Oscar, just a minute. We're trying to back up the clock a little bit for you because you broke up and we couldn't hear you. So we're going to give you like 40 seconds. Yeah, we'll start. We're backed up to 25 seconds to give you a little bit more time because you're part of what you were saying disappeared. So you have 25 seconds left. So sorry about that. But I want to make sure that you were able to speak. Go ahead. Oscar, are you there? Oscar, what happened to you?
Maybe we really lost him.
Oscar? Okay, we're going to let's just do it over. All right. All right, Mr. Chair, in all fairness, we'll start the clock at 1 minute and have Oscar start over. Oscar, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear.
Great. So we couldn't hear all of what you said. So we're starting the clock over so that you have your whole minute. So just a minute when the clock comes up, just start over. All right? Just a minute.
All right. Thank you.
Sure. Great. Go ahead. Whenever you begin, you have 1 minute.
All right. Hi, everybody. My name is Oscar Canales with the Anti-Recidivism Coalition. I know the motion has been voted on already, but I will first off and foremost want to uplift and recognize where these probation camps and halls are at. And they're on Tonga land. They're on land that was the natives people here that are still currently here. I would like to acknowledge that in 1846, 140 Gabrielinos signed a petition demanding access to mission lands, and Californian authorities rejected their petition. I just want to be able to uplift that, and hopefully we don't repeat history, and history is repeating itself. I hope that everybody on this call can see that we must love one another and care for one another. It no longer is about money. It no longer is about currency or about who's going to get richer, because at the end of the day, if people aren't realizing what's going on in the world, we need to realize that we need to honor our land and honor our children, because
all right, thank
it
you,
is
Oscar.
Necessary.
Thank you, Oscar. Time is up. Appreciate your time. All right, Mr. Chair, that ends our public comments.
Okay, everybody. Thank you so much for hanging with us. We really appreciate all of your time. Thank you to the subcommittee for all the work done on the CMJJP and all the work moving forward. Please review the documents as we send them to you. We do hope to have a very robust conversation at our January meeting around the funding. I also want to invite folks to a town hall kind of listening session that we're doing with the City of Laverne as part of the JJCC Juvenile Justice Realignment Block Grant Subcommittee, the JJRBG. So Tuesday, December 7th, that's next Tuesday at 6 p.m., we'll be meeting at, I'm inviting you to a place that I can't remember what it's called, and there's an elementary school there, but the flyer should be forthcoming. So myself and some other folks from the subcommittee will be there on hand to listen to folks from the community. And this is related to the subcommittee's decision to choose Camps Page and or Afflerbaugh as a potential long-term site for our secure youth track. So if folks want to attend, let me know. The flyer should be forthcoming through a couple different avenues. So that will be Tuesday night. Other than that, I suppose we need a motion to adjourn, or I can just adjourn us. Sharon, you're shaking your head. So before I do that, thank you so much to the public commenters. Thank you to the committee for hanging with us this late, and have a great restful weekend. And I will, if I don't see some of you all, please have a happy holidays. Happy Hanukkah to those who are celebrating. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. Take care.